Lemon Russ. Cheers.
Webway has finally brought you here. Behold, Forge the Narrative.
Hey everybody, welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host. I'm joined by Red Powell.
Hello.
Tanya Gates.
Hey everybody.
And Adam Camilleri.
Oh, hello.
Welcome to the show, everybody. Glad you could be back, Red.
Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
It's been a couple of weeks. Sorry for getting this last week's show out late as well. I was traveling. Mentioned that on the show. It's no excuse. Try to get everything out. You know, we're not going to get 5-star reviews if we don't put out the show on time.
I would still give you a 5-star review, though.
No, thank you very much. This weekend, the Liber Imperium goes up for pre-order, and that's for the Age of Darkness, the Horus Heresy. And this has the Assassins, the Custodes, Sisters of Silence, and Solar Auxiliary in it. So a ton of new variety and factions going to be injected right into the game, and also coming with it, some awesome new assassins and stuff. So, I mean, they look neat back when the Imperial...
I am in love with the Venenum. I think that's what it's called, Clade Venenum. That model is amazing.
With the way it looks?
Yeah.
Like the two claws coming down the side? Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I know that people in general didn't like the book Nemesis, which is the one that's like all about the assassins or whatever, but I really enjoyed that one. So.
I did too. I thought it was great.
So I would buy these just to have like that little bit like on my shelf, you know.
So there's short stories that have in fact one of my favorites was one of the information assassin. I can't remember the exact clade that they fall under, but the information assassin essentially just manipulates information and then uses it to slowly but surely like lure their targets into traps and then like kills them. And the short story that they wrote for the Horus Heresy involving that one was awesome. It was really, really cool.
So the Clade Venom, Venenum Assassin, 125 points, 4 attacks piece. Special rules has Infiltrate, Scout, Unnatural Conditioning, Support Squad, and Loyalist. The Unnatural Conditioning gives them immune to the effects of Radphage special rule and any of the rules that negatively affect the toughness characteristics, such as Rad Grenades. Additionally, models with the Poison X special rule and or Fleshbane special rules never wound a model with Unnatural Conditioning on a roll better than 5+.
Ooh, that seems pretty spicy.
That is pretty good. So, you know, with the way, and I know we're mostly talking about Warhammer 40,000, but we're talking about the Age of Darkness stuff, and they have a lot of things that either let you wound better, armor penetrate better, get some extra stuff off of, you know, whatever, different types of keywords that were, not keywords, special rules. It's an olden time. where, you know, they help with their wounding and things like that. So being able to minimize those things probably will go a long way to keeping a 4-wound toughness 4 model alive.
I also just want to say, if we're talking about the miniatures themselves, Adam, you'll be so excited to hear that there is not a tactical rock in sight.
Oh, dear me. Oh, my. Forge World. just doing it better. I don't know if this is Forge World, are they?
I think these are. I think the assassin's going to be from Forge World.
Just know what's up, don't they? Just know what's up. Just like, hey, tactical rock is a design piece, tapped out. Let's do other stuff.
Yeah, it's 2019.
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. I have a question. What clade of assassin was the assassin that... sorry, it's going to be a spoiler. Feel free to edit it out, Paul. What was the clade of the assassin that got Kurz?
That's been established for 30 years. I don't think that's much of a spoiler at this point.
See, I must be a bit delusional at the moment, a bit fever hit, because I wasn't quite sure what I was... what's kosher?
I mean, it was a spoiler for me, but I'm used to it by now.
I think it's a Calidus.
It is absolutely a Calidus.
I thought it was a Calidus as well. Yeah,
I'm sorry. It goes into some great detail in different books, like Aaron Dembski Bowden's Soul Hunter series. It's actually like there's a whole thing to that, and then some of the other 30K stuff alludes to it. But it's really good. It's really good.
I've always liked the assassins. Sure. Like, what is it? Like, didn't they like keep the Eversor like in a box? And then just went over.
Yes.
Had to let him out to merc folks.
Yeah, yeah. So Nemesis did a really good job of painting that, like what they had to do to like how they maintained the Eversor. And it was totally like a almost like what you might read for some of the Blood Angels with Death Company.
Honestly, like, I found that character really heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole thing to it, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, we always sort of think of these assassins as, like, elite and kind of... Like maybe they come from good families or something like that, but I mean, the life that particular assassin had in that book was horrifying, to be fair.
I mean, really, even like the Calidus, right? Like the Calidus, like they go through this whole body change scenario and they've got to learn how to be other people. And I mean, there's a whole aspect to the intensity that it takes to train them there. It's pretty awesome. I mean, just the intensity that goes along with each of these different clades. You know, the headhunter assassin, one of the other three that they've highlighted, they allude to that too with some of the other characters that kind of make up the actor list of Horus Heresy people.
That's the Adamus assassin I think you're talking about.
Yes. Yeah, that one. It's you know, this like headhunter built like assassin that's just made straight up for killing leaders. A lot of cool stuff associated with that. You, again, between that, some of the short stories and Nemesis, you really can bring together. It's kind of interesting that we don't see these later in the future, or if they do exist, it's not playable yet in 40K. So I'm interested to see if that carries forward or not.
The Adamus. Adamus assassin.
My people.
Yeah, yeah. The Adamus has a rule called Des Artisan. When engaged in a challenge, the model with the special rule may choose to increase their weapon skill and initiative characteristic to match their opponents for the duration of the challenge. Additionally, a model with the special rule must always issue a challenge when engaged in a combat with a unit that contains a model with a character unit subtype.
Just like the prototype.
Huh. Wait, so there's no downside to making your weapon skill match your opponent's?
So their weapon skill 5, so they probably would not be doing that a lot of times, especially fighting normal Marines. But if you're like you're jumped into a Primarch, you know, you definitely want to be as fast as they are and as skilled as they are.
Yeah, it's just I was sort of waiting. I was like, okay, that seems pretty good. What's the downside?
No.
Oh, no downside?
No.
Okay.
No, they also have decapitation.
That seems really good.
Yeah, during any fight subphase, a controlling player of a model with the special rule may choose to have the model with the special rule make a single attack with a profile below instead of attacking normally. Then he goes on to say, while using this option, the model with a special rule may not gain bonus attacks for charging additional weapons or any other special rule. Get the decapitation strike. Gives you Street 2, AP 1, melee, unwieldy, fleshbane, murderous strike, 2+. So
that's a lot of words.
Yeah, it's a lot of words. The only complication and that I can really see from the Horus Heresy, you know, this is that you've got to kind of get comfortable with what those words mean, like the poisoned, the murderer strike, and then the value. A lot of these rules have have the word and then a die roll, you know, or whatever. And so that could have been murderer strike 4+ or whatever, you know, easily. So you've got to kind of get comfortable with what all those words means or where to find them in the rule books. That's my only kind of critique of it. But other than that, I think it's really fun. Like it is with the design concepts that they've explored within this game kind of shows what they maybe could have done if there weren't addition changes. You know, we were 2 editions beyond when the kind of the rules were launched for this. And I like it, especially the reaction stuff that you can do. There is another assassin too, the Vanus Infocyte assassin.
Yeah, this is the information one I was talking about that really blows me away conceptually.
Yeah, this has got a lot of rules in this one. But all the assassins are 125 points, which is kind of neat. Can slot into most forces. As you know, also in Horus Heresy, the game's oftentimes larger than 2,000 points, like 2,500, 3,000 points even sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, I play a 30K, I play Horus Heresy, and it's usually that 2,500 points is usually kind of the, I guess, there's not really a competitive standard, but that's what you'd expect to go to an event and play, unless people explicitly say, we want you to take your big boys, your Lords of War, your Primarchs, and then usually it's 3K.
Oh yeah, 3K, because all these things are expensive, like the big titans you want to play with.
Exactly. You get all your toys at 3K. At 2,500, you can take your Primarch, but it's usually your Primarch, and then your Spartan for your Primarch, and then your support squad or your apothecary or your whatnot for your Primarch, and then cool, there's your whole army.
Sisters of Silence, you can do a whole army. I mean, they got the full run, HQs and everything else.
And the best looking tank possibly ever in the Black Ships. Oh my God.
I love that. Like the Flash Gordon looking tank or whatever. I think that is so
cool. It's amazing.
Custodes in here. And of course, old Constantine Valdor.
Man, what a character.
That guy is pretty awesome. Captain General of the Legio Custodes, the Shield of the Emperor, the first of the 10,000. 300.
And that's only like one. That's only like 1% of his names. Let's get real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not even the whole thing. So he has.
His middle name's Brian.
Yeah, the Apollyon spear gives him melee plus 2 strength. So they put him at strength 7, AP 2, melee specialist weapon, lightning blows 6 plus, murder strike 4 plus. Remember I said, you know, the value on the other side of the keyword. And it comes with a hypervelocity bolter, which is a strength 5, AP 2, assault 2, concussive 1 weapon. And he also has a 2 plus armor save and a 3 plus invulnerable save.
Cool. 3 plus invulnerable.
Yeah, for just standing around in his armor. Any models with the loyalist allegiance can draw, and that can draw line of sight to Constantine Valdor, or are in the same combat, can share his leadership. So he's lead 10.
He's such a Chad.
And it matters. He can take a teleport transponder array for a plus 125 points, but that would make him 475 points if you did that.
That's his other name.
Chad.
It's Constantine Chad Brian Valdor.
One of the neat things about the Custodes is that there's nemesis units. When they're locked in combat with nemesis units, they get plus 1 attack. A unit composed entirely of models with the special rule gains the additional bonus of plus 1 to all the charge rolls made when all targets of the charge are nemesis units. When rolling to hit, while engaged with a nemesis unit, a model with the special rule will never need to roll better than a 4 plus to score a hit, unless the nemesis unit is composed entirely of models with the Primarch unit type, or the attacking model is in a challenge with a model that has the Primarch unit type. Nemesis units that include are units that include models with at least one of the following unit types or unit subtypes: Primarch, Dreadnought, Monstrous, Reinforced, Bombard, Demon, Corrupted, Super Heavy, Unique, or Knight. The majority of the models in the unit have a value of 5 or more, and any of the one following characteristics: weapon skill, ballistic skill, wounds, or initiative. Or, last bullet point is, the unit includes any enemy warlord. So lots of things getting checked off on the nemesis box.
I have no idea how many different types of units there are, but it almost seems like it would be better to say a nemesis unit is anything except these 3 things.
Troops without a weapon skill of 5.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He takes pity on those.
You'd be like, sorry, Solar Exilera Captain, you're now a nemesis. What? I'm not even supposed to be here today. So kind of cool that they can basically get a bunch, you know, of their special rules against most things. I do not mind that. I feel like
they should, right? They're custodies. They're like the best of the best. They're the Emperor's bodyguards.
I also kind of, yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but I'll think about also from a different angle is that they're just kind of like declaring you a nemesis. Like, hey, sorry, I have to use all my skills on you because I was going to do it anyway, but now I've kind of.
But now I have to make, yeah. I have to make an example of you.
Yeah. And then write a story about it later.
Yeah. They're not going to get an added name to their name tally for just any old person.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Not just Psyker guy, you know?
Yeah, Psyker guy. Who was that? Yeah, exactly right.
You know, I just busted down Psyker guy with my, you know, relic pole arm.
Angry grocer. Yeah, don't get a name for putting down an angry grocer.
I don't know why, but I just pictured, like, the tombstone, here lies Psyker guy.
No, I do love it. Like, yeah, I had that small Custodes force. And Tanya, I know you have an actual Custodes force.
What's the difference between a small one and an actual one? Yeah,
that's a great point. I could not put a 2,000 point armor together with mine. That's all minuscule.
Oh, okay, no. Point. No, I actually have a force then. An actual Custodes army.
But all the models in here are in here. As you might expect. But it's cool to get them on the table because I know a lot of players have kind of been chopping at the bit. And it is something that I think you can pretty much convert pretty easily your Warhammer 40,000 Custodes Force to a Horus Heresy Custodes Force.
Yeah, I'm probably going to pick up the book and try out the Custodes in Horus Heresy because I have a ton of stuff that I haven't built yet. And since I haven't been playing Custodes, I haven't had like the drive to put together and paint that stuff. So yeah, I'm gonna give it a shot and see how much I remember from the 7th edition special rules.
Just remember that a lot of people are your nemesis.
Yes. Yeah. More likely they will be a nemesis than not.
Well, it's going up pre-order this weekend. Pretty excited about it. Again, because the Sisters of Silence, too, for that... Exactly what you mentioned, Adam. That vehicle kind of makes me want to start an army.
Do it.
As it should. It's a thing of beauty. You too can gather up farmers, angry grocers, and take them to be harvested by the Golden Throne, just as it was meant to be.
Nice. This past weekend, I was in Kansas City, and Blood Angels won a major tournament.
You seem like way too subdued for that.
You do. So
you know that we all know they're good.
Everyone should have seen the memery that happened in our little chat as soon as Blood Angels won. My favorite one, of course, was a meme by me, but I really wanted to put together some more extravagant stuff, but I've been pretty unwell. I just pictured Paul in like a wedding dress with like a single taco and a bouquet of flowers as he asks Zach, who won, onto the show to do an interview at the live stream and be like, I mean, I'm willing to commit if you are. Don't worry, my wife will understand as he pats the back of Zach's hand. Like, beautiful day for Blood Angels and therefore the world.
He played excellently. I mean, that was it. You know, going against Manny Shima there in the end, who's a great player. He'd come over from the UK and, you know, had a great Thousand Sons list. Thousand Sons has been knocking on the door for a long time. The demons, you know, the inclusion of demons, Flamers specifically, are a big boost in power to the Thousand Sons. And, you know, of course, Manny knows exactly how to employ all of his traits and abilities and that kind of stuff. But then so did Zach. And, you know, there was a whole lot of positioning and maneuvering happening during that final game. And it did kind of come down to the final turn. I mean, there was tension, emotion, you know, mostly for me, I guess. Because the players look calm, cool, and collected and in control, you know.
And meanwhile, you're emotionally invested in the game.
But still trying to remain professionally unbiased, you know, doing commentary on the screen. But yeah, I mean, getting playing a great game. And it was one of those unconventional Blood Angel lists, as I call it, because it had both slated for Death Company, like to be able to use that secondary in the games. The one that you get points when your Death Company units eliminate units, and also points when your Death Company units die. And it was running a Whirlwind and like some Eliminators.
I did see that. So I did look at the list and I did see that there were Eliminators in there. And it's something that we used to see all the time in 8th edition. And yeah. So how did the Eliminators do in that game?
They did not do anything really. I don't think. I mean, well, because it wasn't good targets for them.
Yeah.
I don't think during that, because also, you know, range and the way that the opponent was playing. I'm sure they, anytime that you have a unit that can mess with people's deployment and they're on nice big bases and stuff, I mean, it's not bad. It's not a bad thing. And there are a lot of, you know, kind of four and five wound characters out there in the world. So they do have a place. The Whirlwind, you know, came in really well because Whirlwind has a stratagem that allows you to deny Overwatch on units and make them fight last. So very important in today's world. And that got used very well in the very end because, like I said, Flamers amazingly good at shooting and can overwatch, you know, in a real bad way. And when you can turn that off and get in there with a unit they would otherwise vaporize on the charge, you know, it really helped out. And that's actually what gave him his like final one or two no prisoners points to put him in the victory.
It just shows a bit of foresight by the winning gentleman to, and competitively we would call this a tech piece, a piece of tech that he's added to his army for a specific matchup. In this case, allowing him to negotiate, you know, Zinch Flamers without getting overwatched to absolute death. And yeah, it essentially won him the event. piece of tech.
Yeah. Even if it did, I mean, we didn't see too many of his games or hear too many of his games before that. Even if it did nothing in the first six rounds of the game or the tournament, it definitely won that last one. And you need that sometimes. But there's no doubt in the generalship of the player, you know, running Blood Angels, which is cool. But at the same time, the discipline that he had in that game to be patient. And as a Blood Angel player, I can tell you that patience is not high on the list of virtues sometimes.
Like, I mean, say what you will about Blood Angels, but people who play Blood Angels, it's because they'd rather paint red than green, right? At times. there is a bit of orc. There is a bit of wah energy going on with the Blood Angels. It's just send in everything. Oh, we've got guys? Send them in. Oh, you got some more boys? Send them in.
It is. It's kind of like, you know, when all you have is a hammer, everything is a nail, you know, and to be able to play that up, you know, mix it up and have the discipline to really figure out when is the time to strike. And then, you know, maybe how you bait your opponent into certain things, you know, it's a mark of a good general.
Absolutely.
It was played very well. You did very, very few mistakes on either side of the table. And in a cagey chess match, you know, most players are only looking for the player to overextend one time. It only takes one time to kind of mess up. And thankfully, you know, any mistakes were minimized or overcome. I'm sure Zach, the general, thankfully is thinking that. And then, you know, man, the opponent is also trying to make things happen. I mean, he saw an opportunity to get up there and get some of his secondary points by burning some one-use item things and just to affect the scoreboard. You know, just thinking long-term, you know, where we saw the Thousand Suns player get a little bit aggressive and the Blood Angel player show some restraint, which are two different ways that those armies are normally played. And so to see it, you know, kind of displayed like that way on stream, on the final table at a major event, was cool to watch. Can't say enough about the great play that we saw over the course of the weekend. This play is up for, you can see most of it on the Warhammer TV Twitch streams, streaming two tables per round. And we saw some good games.
I tuned in for a little bit. So the game that I tuned in was, I don't know who he was playing against, but it was Phil the Glacial Geek playing somebody else. And I don't know, you could just like feel that there was sportsmanship happening at that table for some reason, even though like they weren't really mic'd. I don't know. They just looked like they were having a great time.
We had a lot of that. And that's the way it is at most events. Like people are just happy to be there. You know, they don't want the players to commit errors. You know, they make some tactical blunders too, but like, don't forget to, you know, use your right armor saver or whatever, you know, that's not what we're talking about. And that was very common across the whole event. Very good atmosphere. And, you know, even like the social activities after the tournament was over, people were still hanging out. I will say,
love it.
Kansas City, it's a quiet town.
I don't know when you were there, man. It's a, I'm a huge fan of Kansas City. It just depends on, I guess, when you go and who you go with. Cause, I've had a pretty bumpy time out in Kansas City.
I had a great time. Went to some really, really local places. I did get some tacos.
No, I mean, it's some great character for a lot of those different places in Kansas City. I'm a huge fan. And some of it can be quite the adventure with some of those places you can walk into.
I went down to one of their kind of like happening districts, the Power and Light area.
Mm-hmm.
Some good restaurants around there. A place called like Brewer's Alley.
I'm in. Let's go.
There was like 15 breweries in a taco place.
That's all you need. Let's go.
So I hit up those tacos. That was good. This is all basically within walking distance from where we were, the hotel. I had a good time. You know, it was the first time I'd ever been to Kansas City. It'd be the first time I've ever been to New Mexico here in a couple of weeks also.
Oh, snap.
Yeah, why don't we take a quick break and then we'll come back and talk about the finals for the U.S. Open Series and all that's going to be happening there.
Let's do it.
See you in a sec.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games, Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey, everybody, we are back. So good, everybody here. Thanks for hanging in there with us. Hey, maybe consider getting some t-shirts If you have not already, we have a couple of different designs up on the link you can find in the show notes. And everything that we get from the t-shirts, I want to take the crew out to dinner. I think the next time we'll all be together, we'll probably be in for the Las Vegas Open coming up pretty soon. So you have a little bit of time to get a t-shirt, but it would mean a lot to us if you did. You get some cool FTN merch, including...
I will say that the t-shirts are very good quality.
Oh, they are.
Yeah. I got one, and sometimes when you order that stuff, like, the design comes off in the wash, but this one is holding out strong. Like, it's really good quality.
There's also a sticker up there if you want to get a sticker. I've had the sticker for quite... it's on my laptop, and I take my laptop just basically everywhere, all around the country, even international. Sticker has not moved at all, not peeled at all. It is awesome. Colors stay vibrant and bright. It's a nice, shiny sticker. Anyway, consider doing it, getting some, and that's and all the like profits from that will go directly to, you know, some nice hangout time for the crew. We are basically virtual and don't get to hang out in person very often, and it would be cool.
Or if it's me, it's never.
Coming up in a couple of weeks from now, the finale for the U.S. Open Series, and that finale, you can actually win some tickets to it based on your performance at certain events, U.S. Open events, and other major events around the globe, actually. London Grand Tournament, Adepticon, and the LVO. Players could win positions coming to these events from those events, including the U.S. Open Series. And there is a Sigmar tournament, a Warhammer 40,000 tournament, and a Kill Team tournament. And those tournaments are all broken up into two different segments. You got folks that qualified for the like battle point only category, the best general bracket, and you got folks that qualified for their overall performance that includes paint and their battle points. So you got like, you know, spectacular hobbyist and generals, and then folks that just absolutely killed it on the general side of things.
This to me really shows G-Dub's vision, and they're trying to reward. You know how. I mean, I can't remember if it was 8th or 9th edition, but the 3 ways to play it came out. Like, they're really holding to that. They want to reward all people who come to this hobby and give them a place that they can all be celebrated. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. I'm really bummed I'm not coming. I can't do that many international trips in a year, but I'm going to be there in spirit. I hope it's an amazing event.
Yeah, if anyone can get out, I think there's some still tickets for the narrative side. Like, there are other things happening in the hobby stuff, too. At this amazing resort in New Mexico. But on to the tournament side I'm talking about. So the players know who they're going to play in round one. Brackets have been established. The seeding for the brackets is based off of a snapshot of taken before this happened, of course, of where they sit in their ITC rankings at the moment. So as a metric for establishing that. And it's created some interesting pairings in round one. On both sides of the like the best general or the best overall category, at least in Warhammer 40,000. Just as a for instance, John Lennon and Richard Siegler are playing in round one in the best general bracket. You know, the reason that's interesting because they're both great players, but also from the same club group, and that's going to be a slobber knocker, probably, as it were.
So I know that in BCP. If you're from the same club, it won't pair you like that. So obviously these pairings are made not in BCP. Like
They're not. But that's a setting, I think, in BCP. You can either turn it on or turn it off.
Oh, okay.
Adam, correct me if I'm wrong. But these are set, you know, based on certain criteria. And it is basically just your where these players fall in the stack for seeding.
100%. It's a thing you can turn on and off. And most events do have it turned on. Like, last thing you want to do is travel interstate overseas and then play your mate you drove there with. With this one, if I had to assume, I think they're doing – I can't remember what the term is for the – you know, let's say you've got a top 16. It's 1 versus 16, 2 versus 15, et cetera, et cetera. And one of the matchups is going to be really interesting. I'm not sure – did you mention that already, Paul?
Well, there's several different – but we just talked about the Richard versus John in round one.
Richard is invited because he's last year's champion. Now, he's had an extremely quiet –
He won the LVO.
Yeah, exactly. He won the LVO, and he also won the US Open Series last year as well. He won every single one of the events of the US Open last year.
He did. So that would have put him in last year's final, but he's earned his spot again.
Yes, but he's had an extremely quiet year. on the ITC front, extremely quiet by his standards. And whereas John is, I think, in the top five, if not in the top, definitely in the top 10 in the world at the moment. So it's really quite interesting, the fact that they're playing, because one of them has had a very quiet season, but is possibly one of the greatest players of all time. The other ones have been grinding away at the top of the game. It's really interesting to see that happen.
Yeah, some of the other matchups here in round one are Jack Harpster versus Alexander Sacco. Jack won the Nova Open as well as the Chicago U.S. Correct. Open. Yep.
And John won the Seattle Open as well, John Lennon.
Yeah, I believe so. And then Alexander won the London Grand Tournament. The next next match here is Zach Point, who was winner of Adepticon, versus Zach Kerstetter, who Blood Angels just won the Kansas City Open.
That's cool. That's going to be a cool matchup.
Yeah, and then Ben Sherwin versus Matt Geyer there. And Ben, since Jack had already had a qualifier because of his performance in Nova Open, his spot went to Ben. Next one down there at the Chicago. And the players have to submit their factions, I believe, this weekend. And they'll be set in stone of what they're going to play. They don't have to be the same thing that they qualified with. It could be anything. But they, at least on the general side, they have to go out. They can be anything, but they set their factions. And then the next week, they have to have their army list submitted.
Man, I can't wait. Nothing excites me more than a Shark Tank tournament. It's so amazing. Such a spectacle of the game, seeing it be played at the highest level. It's phenomenal.
And this is double elimination, so there's a little bit of drama.
Oh, yep.
There. So, you know, player could be on basically the, you know, one leg and still go into the finals.
Love to hear it.
Yep. And on the best overall side, we've got, a match, you know, two names you could have easily seen on the general side, Andrew Gagne versus Sean Naden in round one.
That's hilarious. Sean is, also in the contention for one of the greatest players of all time. And Andrew is, oh, geez, if this was the top table at LVO in 2017, 2016, that could very well have been. These guys are absolute juggernauts.
Yeah, and I believe the criteria for the best overall bracket category is that you have to bring an army that's at least of the same quality that you qualified with. I don't know that it has to be the exact same one, but I'm not the organizer. I'm just reporting here at this point. But I think it's really exciting that the first round pairings are known from the players. I actually love that drama, by the way, because I know that if I knew who my first round opponent would be, I'd be doing all the internet research I possibly could be doing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say I would be doing all of the online smack talk that I possibly could.
Oh, that, yeah, probably a little bit of that too. but that would, again, figuring out what they normally take, if their secondary choices they normally take, that kind of stuff. Like there's, if there was only a tool that one could use to go to find all that out. It's a little poking fun at some friends we know. it's love it. Let's see there. I believe there may be some cool things revealed that weekend. So you're going to want to be tuning in, hanging out that weekend if you haven't already.
Big wink.
when have they not revealed something cool at one of the opens, right?
The opens themselves don't typically get reveals. There are some at some major events, and I think this is going to be a major event, especially with the other stuff that's happening that weekend. Red, I don't know if you want to speak to some of that other stuff.
I mean, so the grand narrative, and I got to say, not to be discounted amongst all the amazing competitive aspects that they're going to have, the grand narrative and what they've included with that, I am super stoked. I mean, they've just continued to release more content in regards to the whole system that they've created, right? There's a whole new planet, group of planets that they're all throwing down in, and they've recently released more information on the different characters that are going to play out. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that Armageddon is made out of, that these kind of events, this is how some of these characters came to be, right? This is how Gazgul became what he is known for, these kinds of events. So it's really, really exciting. I'm interested to see how it goes, and I'm glad to be a part of it. It's going to be interesting to see how each player can contribute to that.
There's going to be costumes. When you check into the hotel, you will be referred to as your warlord name.
Yeah.
Oh, sick.
So as I understand it, there will be themed like battle zones and everything. It's going to be pretty immersive. So I think folks are really going to enjoy it.
I mean, it's going to be hard. I think it'll be hard not to enjoy it. There's just so many aspects to it.
Yeah.
Brett, please tell me that you're going to cosplay as a Tanith first and only.
I'm trying to get it together. My Tanith are definitely off. I think I've talked about them before. Like, I definitely made a lot of elements of the original Tanith, but I wanted to have my own crusade narrative version of Tanith too. You know, like some regimental reinforcements, because you'll see when you read the books that happens a number of times. And so I've got my own little contingent of Tanith that are joining up with the rest of Gaunt's forces. And I'm really excited to bring that into play and see how it goes. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah, man. I know a lot of people are really jazzed about coming. And there's going to, when you've got so many things happening, and also the hobby classes, like there's also like Titan painting classes where you roll in with the Titan and you leave with it painted.
Yeah, I was about to say, do they give you a demo model to practice on?
Well, the class, I think, is $1,500 to enter. Ooh. So, yes.
Yes, Adam, that's exactly what they do. That's amazing.
And by world-class painters, too. Like, there's so many cool things to be doing at the U.S. Open and the normal events, and this is going to be, like, jacked up to 11, and I'm going to be there.
So that means that it's really jacked up to 12.
Well, at least you'll be hearing about somebody talking about it. We'll see how it goes on stream. Going to be doing some coverage. Going to be bringing Warhammer 40,000 and Sigmar coverage.
Ooh, Sigmar coverage.
Yeah, over the course of the weekend, which is not, we don't normally bring coverage from Sigmar.
Well, I'm excited that you are. That means that I'm going to have to clear my schedule.
Hopefully we get the actual schedule posted. I don't know when any of this stuff is happening. I just know that it is happening.
You just show up.
I'm going to show up and I'm going to talk about Warhammer until they turn the cameras off.
And then you're going to, you know, socialize with other people and keep talking about Warhammer.
Yes. But in a cool looking place. The pictures I've seen, it looks beautiful.
Oh, like the event. It's in a resort, right?
It is. It's in a, I don't know if it's in a desert and some mountains. Like my recollection of the pictures of like the whole thing sits like in a very scenic ravine.
It's got a very ranch feel to it. It's pretty cool. The Havana Resort, I think it's something along those lines.
I hope I've got like a deck or a patio off my room so I can get out and watch the sunrise. Drink a little coffee, get ready for the day. That is one of the coolest things about, you know, going back in time, traveling that way across the country.
The jet lag allows you to enjoy the sunrise.
To see a sunrise, yeah.
I was going to say, like, ugh, you morning people. Jeez.
No, technically it's like noon for me, you know. Yeah.
Sorry, Red. I didn't mean to make the disgusted noise at morning people.
I mean, I'm a morning person, not necessarily by choice, but by profession. Okay.
There you go. I don't know what other people are bringing as far as like stuff to the event yet, but I have to imagine that some of these players are going to kind of stick with, you know, what they've won with. I would have to imagine that because they know they're good with it. But you got players like Jack Harpster who has proven that he can basically bring whatever he wants to events and still do all right.
I'm keen to see Votann land in full force and see what they can do.
Yeah, all the models and everything would be out, fully out by then. Mm. I mean, what are you thinking as far as list-wise goes with that?
Right now, a bit of the online consensus is that Ymir is the way to go. Then you'd be a conglomerate, which is the one that just straight up just gives you an inborn save. So very, very potent on a lot of fronts. It also has a couple of really sweet bits of tech into what is good in the game at the moment. But what is good is ever evolving. But I think Votann have a lot of different layers of issues for people to unpack that we're not quite used to right now. The level of durability they have across the board, in addition to the lethality of firepower, is kind of similar to Tau. They have the land fortresses, which is akin to like a Riptide and a Hammerhead, you know, in a trench coat, essentially, with durability on top of both. But then you have the X factor in the fact they have legitimate melee units and troops that are no joke. Whereas you could say like Tau and other shooting army troops, you know, guardsmen, etc., are a bit of a joke. Yeah, the Votann, no joke. especially some of the funniest stuff we've seen so far as people who've been experimenting with bits and pieces online, is that Votann is surprisingly absurd in melee versus demons. Because versus demons, it doesn't really matter what rend you've got. You just need a quantity of attacks that make it through the wound step and damage, and a damage on the end of it. And when you have four judgment tokens on a greater demon and your piddly little Hearthkin warrior walks up and just wounds a toughness, a bloodthirster on a 4+ to hit, it gets pretty silly at times. It's pretty funny. And so people are finding some things that Tau and other shooting armies that are not very good at, that Votann absolutely shines in that little realm. So
I wouldn't suspected that, but that's really cool that it just rolls out. It's just, they've just got decent stats there.
Yeah, it just turns out auto wounding on a to hit roll that you can reroll in an innumerable amount of ways. It's pretty strong.
What?
Yeah, who would have thought? That was sarcasm. Yeah. Wild. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I don't mind that. So I guess let's just transition a bit. Is like with Votann out, finally the rules coming out. Like, what are lists going to look like?
It's really centered. A lot of it is centered on what I think are the two almost ubiquitous units. I think a lot of it is pretty much up to interpretation, especially this early in the piece. I think the bikes and the land fortresses are the two defining key pieces for me.
Even with the change on the land fortress not getting
even. Absolutely. Even with the change, I think it's on you to determine how many of each of those you want. I don't think you ever go more than two land fortresses. I think three is too, way too much of your army. You don't have enough to play the game unless it's a teams event and you're going all in on the oops, you got tabled approach, which is very relevant. Very, very. It's just fine. But the bikes to me are the thing that goes out and gets you points. They're extremely fast. Surprisingly durable on a bunch of different fronts. Their OPSEC, which is the biggest thing that brings them to the table. And they've also got a vast array of different weapons, and so they can be kitted for different metas very effectively. So they're the thing that goes and takes an objective, clears and takes an objective off your opponent because they can get around a corner. And the Land Fortress, of course, is the thing that sits in your backfield and kills anything your opponent thinks they're brave enough to put out in a firing lane. Mm-hmm. So they're a traditional backfield, you know, like a mainline battle tank. And then between that, it's kind of up to your interpretation. Do you want to go with the Chthonian Berserkers? Do you want a couple of the Hearthguard? You want some Sagittars or, you know, a bunch of different options. I think the Brokir Forgemaster? I think that guy is pretty ubiquitous as well, especially if you're taking any land fortresses. But right now on release, Paul, you and I think we had a decent discussion about the difference between taking the Magna weapons and the Ion weapons or the beam weapons. And I think the Magna weapons are now, because of the change to how the tokens work, as in like a judgment token wound does not count as a 6 and therefore will not proc the Magna Rail special rule. For those who do not know, the Magna Rail special rule on a 6 to wound means that the damage of that attack carries over. It's almost applied the same as a mortal wound is. So, you know, mortal wounds don't, you know, you do two mortal wounds to a 1 damage model, it kills, you know, 2 1 damage models, 1 wound models. I think that's exclusively for the realms of the Greater Therian League, which I do see as getting talked about as being very playable as well, but I think Ymir is where most people are starting.
Yeah, okay, I'm with you. I'm following. We also had a debate about the normal weapons on the troops as to which one is probably the most efficient.
I still prefer I like the Ions better, but the range that you get with the bolters is a big deal. I think I'd probably go for a mix. If I'm taking a battalion, I'd probably go one Ion, two bolters, or two and one. I wouldn't all in either of them. There's just too many. The great thing about the game right now is so much balance. You don't want all in on one option
word.
Because you'll leave yourself exposed in a different matchup. So you want a bit of everything, which I think has made a lot of list construction, a lot of matchups, a whole lot more interesting, a whole lot more exciting.
Yeah, curious how it all shakes out with how people conform or go on a new path and find something new with the list. I mean, I think there was a lot of thought that all bikes or a lot of bikes would be very good. I think they are still going to be very good.
Absolutely. I think the bikes are my favorite unit that they have. I think is the bikes, because I think the bikes more than anything else will get you points, will define wins and losses. Like the close games will be, I mean, if a land fortress is going to table your opponent, it's just going to table your opponent, right? You're going to do just fine that game anyway. To me, when the chips are down, it's things like the berserkers and the bikes that are going to really get you out of the tight spots and turn losses into wins or draws into wins.
I kind of want to use the Sagittarius too, like, and split people into the squads into the different transports.
It's freaking amazing.
I don't know what the right mix is. I just know I want to do it. You know, it's like how many berserkers to take. But we shall see. Time will tell on that. Especially when the models get people saying you can see what people go in all in on. And they have to make an impact on a tournament. You know, as far as like the newness goes, they have great rules. People won't be expecting them yet. I do expect, but by the time the models, they get in full release, I do expect them to make an impact on whatever tournament they go to. How you get around that is kind of educating yourself on it because you're going to see it. I would probably say you're going to see it within 2 or 3 weeks because there are. There aren't that many, like, one or two vehicles, not that difficult to put together and paint. You know, what we saw with Hobby Lag, with things like Gene Shealer cults, where you need to paint 100-something models or whatever. You know, that was a bit of a problem. It had a little bit of time. Same with Adeptus Suratas. Leagues of Votan, not quite that bad, especially if you can wrap up points in some of these things like the Land Forgers.
That is very true.
So just things to consider. If you're thinking you got another month or so, I don't think so. I think you got another couple of weeks. And so it is time to get prepared, you know, or just ask a lot of questions, which is okay. So Red, you said you're driving into the finale?
I am. Yeah, nice thing, I mean, with the proximity and everything, is that it's just not that far. And so about I think a 4-hour drive from where I'm at, and then I'll be there. You know, it was really nice. I got to bring, brought my oldest to ATC. I'm going to bring my oldest and my second oldest. So it's going to be pretty cool because they're going to get to experience that, be part of that. I think they'll really, really appreciate that.
We may have to go on a search for tacos.
Wait, I'm sure they'll have some good ones.
I don't know how far away it is from the city itself, like the main part of the city.
Yeah, I'll have to look at that, but I'll do some research. We'll find a place. I'm sure it won't be a problem.
Looking forward to that, especially in that part of the country. I'm sure the regional food is delicious.
It is. I'll just go ahead and vouch for that.
I got to make it a point to try to, you know, go someplace that is decidedly non-local. To me anyway.
Sure.
That is one of the greatest things about coming to these things, which you'll hear me talk about. I travel a fairly decent amount this year, and looking forward to kind of settling into some easy times at the end of the year. Get some hobby time. Finally, paint some stuff.
What's on the docket? What are you itching to get to?
That is a great question. So I have been working on some leagues stuff, and then I'm hoping to get some hands on some guard stuff. Astra Militarum coming up.
Oh, snap.
I mean, that Rogaldorn tank is not going to paint itself.
I already put my name down at the local game store. I was like, hey, you're saving that box for me, right? Yeah. Good.
And I hope, I've got some serious wish. We all play Astra Militarum. Let's do some wish listing.
Okay. Wow.
This is a rare moment, folks.
All right.
Usually I get pulled off the ledge here. Now I'm getting pushed over it.
Yeah, as far as like, what are we hoping for out of this thing?
I mean, I'm really, okay. So we've seen what the tank, the guns are going to be on the tank, right? That just came out this last week. We saw where it's D6 plus 3 strength, the Bane, not the Bane Billy, the Lamon Russ is strength 8, AP 2, damage 3. And then the Rogaldorn is also D6 plus 3, but it's even stronger.
It's got so many guns on it.
It does, but those turret weapons are going to be legit. And so, I mean, you think about it, D6 plus 3 is pretty solid. And given that they were shooting twice before, I don't know. That's not to say that they aren't. You know, there used to be with Lamon Russ, if you moved less than half its movement.
Are we just going to let everybody get away with saying Lamon Russ?
Yeah, probably. Go ahead, Tanya, correct me.
No, because that's how I see it too.
Oh my goodness.
Boom. I'm on red.
What has this show become? Lemon Russ.
So the Lemon Russ battle cannon, strength 8, neg 2 AP, the 3 damage. The oppressor cannon on the Rogaldorn is 90-inch range, heavy D6 plus 3, strength 10, neg 3 AP, 4 damage.
Remember when you had to take like a special relic to get 3 damage on a battle cannon? You remember those days?
Yeah.
It's nice to just have that now.
They could almost give up with the range bans on some of these weapons. As soon as you get over 48, you can just write table. Just write table there, G-Dub.
That's
range,
what I'm talking about.
The table.
I told you. We just, it's the way of kill team. There's no difference. You don't need to have a range, right? Like, it just ranges the table. That's it.
Yeah. As soon as you get to a certain, as soon as you get above 48, just whatever you want. Whatever. The car park. Just the venue, range the venue. Where are you at? Scout hall. Write in whatever you want. Wish listing wise, I want Bulgrin to be good, because the biggest fail or the biggest thing that's held Guard back in the current book is that when the 9th edition defensive mechanics came into effect, Guard couldn't hang. We had no way of gaining any respect from our opponent. There was no reason to not just push it all in against Guard all the time, because we just couldn't get any, like we said, couldn't get any respect. So I want Bulgrin to be Ogryn. Be fantastic to have actual Ogryn be strong powerhouses in combat again to get some of that respect back. I'd also like to see some of the fringe tanks, things like Hellhounds, Sentinels, which are getting a new model. I'd love to see them become players again, because it's just so cool to see those ever, you know, that used to be. Well, so they're the tanks I fell in love with when I started playing Guard. The Hellhounds, the Sentinels, the Baneblades. They're the ones that brought me to the dance. No offense to Lehman Russ, looks awesome, but it's not the most exciting of chassis. You know, it's pretty basic. You just kind of put it in the firing lane, roll the dice, it does the thing. I've always found Hellhounds to play a lot more exciting. Like the first way I played Guard was Hellhounds supporting Chimeras full of guys, full of veterans.
Yep.
Just busting around corners. Hellhound, you know, gets rid of the chaff. Veterans get stuck in with the melted guns, the plasma guns, the heavy flamers, the heavy weapons teams, all that stuff. That was my favorite way to play. I'd love to be able to do that again. But yeah, mechanized infantry, like mechanized Kassakan, give me all of them. How many, G-Dub, how many Kassakan have you got? The answer is all of them, and that's how many I want.
I would like there to be a little bit more of a psychic presence on the table for Guard. Like you could take psychers, but they're not really that effective. So yeah, I would like us to see maybe, I don't know, better spells or some other way to beef up psychers in such a way that like we could actually play in that phase.
Okay. Something like the old Psyker Battle Squad or something like that.
I never played with that. That wasn't available to me since I've been playing. But do tell, what is that?
Well, the Psyker Battle Squad used to be able to lower people's leadership. You had a power that could lower leadership by, I think, the number of Psykers in the squad. So you could put, the combo used to be every time Fate Weaver would take a wound, he would have to roll his leadership test. So you'd tag him with like a -7, like a -8 leadership test, and then shoot him with las guns until he went off the table. That was fun.
That sounds pretty janky, but also hilarious.
Really enjoyed that. Wasn't it Fate Weaver? That ability, I'm pretty sure it was Fate Weaver, but basically a very powerful model. The head wings look like a giant bird, but they had a very relevant psychic unit that you could put on the table back then.
Yeah, see, that's the right word, relevant. It's like a relevant psychic unit.
I was having a joke, like what are the most feeble data sheets in the game? And Gretchen was thrown out there, Nurgling was thrown out there, and the Weird Vein Psyker was thrown out there as the most feeble of data sheets. And I think it should be like the stat line should be like, this sucks, is what you read when you look at the stat line, and then the special rules are like, this is cool. I'd love to see the old commissar rule come in, because it used to be you had to take a commissar with your Weird Veins. Oh no, it wasn't that you had to, but if your Weird Veins ever perils next to your commissar blapped one of them, and it was cool. You didn't suffer the perils, but you lost one of your unit.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Yep. That's totally a thing.
Wouldn't it be kind of funny that like, instead of rolling to cast for your Weird Vein Psykers, you just blow one up, and your spell goes off. Once you run out of models, you can't cast anymore.
No more casting.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit of that kind of sacrifice stuff.
Yeah.
For the mortals of the Imperium. I do hope that all the Baneblade chassis are cool.
You mean like cool rules, because they all look pretty cool.
Yes, like great rules. Like they're absolutely feared when they're on the table.
Like it should be a dilemma on which Baneblade am I going to take today? You know what I mean?
Yeah, give me the 9-iron. Right. But they did give us a preview of the chassis and toughness 9 with 30 wounds. That's one more point of toughness and 4 more wounds than are on the current model.
I'm staring at 7 Bane Blades I have on the table right now. Not sure why I shouldn't have.
They're all different,
yeah.
Like,
yeah, boy.
Chassis and guns, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Or is it all?
I've only got four. Yeah, I've only got four.
I've got 4 set ones, and then the other 3 are actually I've got a modifiable, because you can set them up like that.
My only shame is my legit Forge World Stormhammer, which doesn't have rules anymore. Yep.
I no longer have a Shadow Sword. I had to paint one up for a team tournament, and also at that point in time, painted up a completely brand new Guard army. We didn't have a Shadow Sword kit, so I had to repaint my my personal one for the team tournament, and had a bunch of other Guard army, and I just gave it to the guy that took the Guard army.
Ah, that's lovely of you. But yeah, I would like the Shadow Sword to not be the only takeable Baneblade chassis. Yeah, I'd like them all to have their merits.
I would just like people to, like, I don't know, like, feel a little squeamish when you put one on the table.
Well, first and foremost, you need to be able to deploy the thing.
in more you're asking way too much.
quit wishlisting, Adam.
That's a step too far. Wow.
You see better deployment zones that we're going for here?
Yeah, my chassis is too thick for this deployment zone issue rather than this chassis is not good enough thing.
I guess it would be cool if you could field essentially like an all tank company type stuff.
I mean, nothing says that can't deploy it on its side, right? That's still a thing.
Is that a thing?
No. People have tried it. People have tried it all on. But no, it's not a thing.
Oh, wow.
People do get just people be peopling.
Gamers good at game.
One of my favorite stories one of my mates tells around the the bar after the game is about how he played against a bloke playing with a Manticore, and he used to be able to. So the Manticore back end, you can build it so you can pick the turrets up and push them down, as in the missiles. You can pivot them up. It's on a hinge, the model is.
Yeah.
And in his turn, the missiles somehow pointed straight up and seed over the terrain, so they didn't take the negative to their ballistic skill on the scatter dice. And then when you went to shoot them, the missiles were lying flat and you couldn't see them.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no, that's not on.
That's a feature. I can't imagine that. I can't imagine thinking that he could do that.
With a straight face, trying to argue like that you could, is just like, yeah.
Like folks that try to raise and lower the drop pod doors, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it's hilarious.
What do you do?
We have come such a long way as a people. Yeah.
Hey, look, rules didn't say I couldn't. It's not an excuse, by the way. I'm just...
it's just like that Jurassic Park line. Just because you can, you never stop to think of whether or not you should have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it. Hey, well, that's our show this week. I know we talked a bit about some upcoming events and tournaments. I hope to see some of y'all there. If you are there, by all means, please come up and say what's up. And we'll be back next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
See ya.
Our craft worlds are sentient beings. These hosts are not. Better luck next time, monkeys!